This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Tweaking the balance of power between labor and employers. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. First, Chair of the Federal Reserve, Jay Powell, testified on Capitol Hill yesterday. The point of his visit was to explain to everybody what the Fed is thinking as it guides the U.S. economy through the pandemic and beyond. On inflation, he said, it's going to come down. On the labor market, he said, more people will get back to work in the coming months. But
even after this expected wave of supply comes, it's likely that we'll still be short of maximum employment. And at that time, support for demand will be appropriate. And so that's why we wouldn't see that it's time to raise interest rates now, because we think it'll take some time even after this to get there.
Powell said that because we are not only going to have to recapture what was lost in the pandemic, but what could have been. The U.S. was generating 200,000 jobs a month before the crisis. Last week, 360,000 people filed for unemployment, also far more than in better times. Diane Swonk is chief economist with Grant Thornton. She told us that number is a pandemic low, but it's still high.
Not only is 360,000 higher than we thought we'd be right now, and one of the reasons the Fed is hedging its bets on the side of employment over inflation at the moment, it's basically well above the pace we saw, about 200,000 pre-pandemic. And last week's numbers were revised up yet again. And these are initial unemployment claims. These have nothing to do with supplements or all of the heated political debate around what is keeping workers from participating in the labor market right now. And I think Chairman Powell also is pretty optimistic that we'll have some answers as schools reopen and all of the supplements go away in the fall about how many people are willing to look for jobs. And then the question is, how many of those people are we still able to absorb?
Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton. The National Labor Relations Board has 5 members. It enforces federal laws that grant workers the right to form unions and collectively bargain. A Senate committee will consider 2 Biden appointees to the board today. The full Senate is getting ready to consider a Biden-appointed general counsel to the board. These appointments could have a big effect on the labor landscape. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more.
If President Biden's picks are confirmed, the board will go from Republican control to Democratic control, and that could affect how the board interprets the law, says Harvard Law School's Benjamin Sachs.
They decide which workers are entitled to the protections of federal labor law and what exactly those protections look like.
The current board has tended to favor employers.
For example, the Trump NLRB ruled that workers don't have a right to use company email for the purposes of union organizing. That's a big deal.
A Democratic-controlled board could reverse that and also speed up the union election process, says Celine McNicholas with the Economic Policy Institute.
Standard timelines, preventing unnecessary litigation from occurring before an election actually is held, those would make real differences.
Almost 11% of workers belong to unions as of 2020, but in the private sector, the rate is just over 6%. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Over the course of the pandemic, the staggering job losses, the social unrest after the murder of George Floyd, a national conversation emerged on equity and inclusivity in our society. Chris Farrell, Marketplace senior economics contributor, says there's an overlooked way to invest in equity and inclusiveness and economic stability, and that's early childhood education. He joins us now. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Why is early childhood education so critical?
The scientific economic research has converged around the insight that the biggest bang for the public investment buck comes from investing in early childhood development programs, especially if they're targeted at young kids living on the nation's lowest incomes. And, you know, what these investments do is they improve academic achievement, they boost social skills, and as people become adults, higher incomes and greater employment. And there's a recent study by Nobel laureate James Heckman and three other economists, and they took this research one step further by examining the intergenerational and intragenerational impact from a famous pioneering high-quality early education program, the Perry Preschool Project.
The Perry Preschool Project, that is from the early 1960s, focused on a group of low-income African-American children. Recap that for us.
Right. So this was in Ypsilanti, Michigan. They were 3 to 4 years old, and they received 2 years of preschool sessions during the weekdays starting at age three. And they also received weekly teacher home visits during that period of time. And it was a high quality program. So it had a curriculum that was designed to spur, you know, a development of cognitive and non-cognitive skills. And studies have found that the Perry preschool children were far more successful on many measures, including improved earnings, than the control group. So the program influenced the creation of the federal Head Start program that does provide early childhood education for poorer families.
So with that background, what's important about this latest study by Heckman and his co-authors?
So I think this is really an incredible study because what they did is they used newly collected data from the participants in the late midlife, so age 54, but they also looked at their siblings as well as their children and the long-term gains of the original participants, their siblings, and their children are striking, especially when it comes to income gains. So if you take the intergenerational and intragenerational effects into account, they conservatively estimate, and it's a conservative estimation, the program generates $9 of benefits for every dollar that's invested in it.
Chris Farrell, Marketplace Senior Economics Contributor, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.